Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Gabrielle Burton researched Tamsin Donner for 38 years. She retraced the Donner's ill-fated overland route from Illinois, headed west to California with her family, and documented the journey in Searching for Tamsin Donner, a memoir, history, travelogue that came out last year. This year, the novel about Tamsin and her journey with her family, it's called Impatient with Desire, came out, and it relies in part on Tamsin's 17 surviving letters and a whole lot more research of the Tamsin or the Donner family and the excursion they took about 160 years ago through the Sierra Nevada mountain range. And half of them came out alive and half of them didn't. And Gabrielle has made her way to our studio today. Welcome to the show, Gabrielle.
Thanks so much. I'm
also
happy.
Welcome to one of Gabrielle's five daughters who, with their father, retraced the Donner route with their mother, Gabrielle Burton Jr. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
We'll work out how we're going to distinguish the names and the people later. For now, we'll just focus on this story. That felt a little awkward. You know, the one word I didn't bring up in the introduction was what the Donner family and what the Donner route, the Donner story is most people know about is, of course, the cannibalism.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I thought, let's just, you know, lay that right on the table right now, because you make some pretty interesting assertions and some writing I saw of yours. An essay, I think it was just last month, you seemed to say that who cares whether or not the Donner Party turned to cannibalism to survive, that folks make too much of that part of the story. Tell me about your frustration. You researched the family for 38 years, and Tamsin in particular. Talk a little bit about that frustration you have.
Well, it's such a great American adventure. The whole overland migration is a tremendous American epic. And it's the Donner story in particular is an adventure, and it's a tragedy, and it's a love story. And these are people who fought everything would be advantageous for them and had bad luck. They had prepared very well, but there many, many things happened that were unforeseen, and they were trapped, and some of them turned to cannibalism to survive. Possibly if more of them had turned to cannibalism, more would have survived. That was the very, very last resort. They had they tried to stay alive and keep their children alive with just a desperate ingenuity. They ate everything, the cattle hides. That's what they mainly survived on for some months, boiled cattle hides that was a gluey pulp, and also burning the cattle bones and crumbling them into water and sucking on them. The children sucked on little tree branches to staunch their hunger. One rescue team came in, a very, very small rescue team, and they crept out at night and ate the shoelaces of the rescuers, the leather shoelaces. They ate their dogs. They tried to hunt without success. Eventually, there was simply nothing, and it was the very last resort. It only happened at the very end, and yet it's what everybody associates with the Donner Party rather than their heroism and their endurance in this tremendous adversity.
So just to, the Donner Party, it's sometimes called the Donner Reed Party. It was a group of American pioneers who set out for California in a wagon train. Now, it's one thing I learned from your books was that this was one of the first family wagon trains to go out there. I guess I was raised on Wagon Train, the TV show,
yeah,
and thought this happened all the time.
Yeah.
But this was they were actually breaking new ground and making this trip.
Well, family started going in 1841, and then a few more went every year. But 1846, the year that the Donners went, was called the Year of the Families. And that year, 1,500 went to California. And they had many small children with them, which later caused them a lot of trouble when people tried to rescue them because the children had to be carried out. But they were taking their civilization with them. They were going to make a new life, and they knew that wagons had gotten through. And so people who went before would send back letters to newspapers. There were groups that discussed weekly, read books about it. And they, even though you look at a map at that time, and out in the middle it just has a big splotch that says wilderness, and you think, oh, why would anyone go there?
Right.
They really thought, you know, wagons have done it. We know what to expect. We can prepare. And though they knew they would have a desert and there would be difficult times, they took three wagons of provisions. They really, the Donner family themselves, and they really thought it would be fine.
They did prepare very carefully, and they kind of got together in groups, and families got together and started to sort of put together their group.
Mm-hmm.
And they studied it together for a long time.
Well, yes, the George and Tamsin Donner went with their in-laws, Jacob and Elizabeth Donner, and then there were also the Reeds who left from Springfield. They then later hooked up in Independence, Missouri, with other people who were going and picked up a few more people along the way, and that was the 87 people that ultimately formed the Donner Party.
Why did you decide to tell the story through the from the point of view of Tamsin Donner, of course, the matriarch of the Donner family?
Well, I've been fascinated by Tamsin Donner since the early 70s.
I'd never even really heard of her. I mean, I knew there had to be a mother out there somewhere. You just thought of the Donner Party. I never thought of the individuals except for maybe the father.
Well, I had never heard of the Donner Party, actually. I was born in Michigan and was living in Washington, D.C. at the time. And I went to Breadloaf Writers Conference in 1972. At that time, I was writing poetry. And I had five tiny children, and I went off very excited to this writers conference where people told me that I could write. They didn't tell me it was going to take so many years. But one night toward the end of the time, it was 2 weeks, a teacher there, William Lederer, who wrote The Ugly American, he stopped me and he said, I had a dream about you last night that you were going to write a book about people eating each other to survive. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, most people eat each other to survive, and you're going to write a book that shows a better way. And I said, how do I do that? And he said, well, how do I know? It's your book, not my book. Well, I had no idea what he was talking about. And I went home and I started a short story that was actually about a woman, a modern woman in the 70s, who was making a cross-country motorcycle trip. I didn't know much about motorcycles either, but I bought a motorcycle. And I had done many drafts of this story. It got longer and longer, and I realized that I had no geography in it at all. So I asked my husband one night, he had driven that many times, and I said, what would they see? And after he said many things, at one point he said, well, they'd have to go over Donner Pass. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, you know, where they ate each other to survive. Well, that was the first I ever heard of the Donner Party. And I got out these books, and Tamsin Donner just leapt off the page. She had five daughters. I had five daughters. She was an adventurous woman. I was an adventurous woman and wanted to be more of an adventurous woman.
And so did she.
Yes.
The desire.
Yes. And we were all looking for heroines at that time. It was the women's movement, and she just seemed like a perfect role model for me. Not much was known about her. And then later, in just researching her, she was an interest that became a consuming interest. And even though I didn't write about her for 38 years, I always went back to her.
38 years is a really, really long time.
Well, I didn't write every day for 38
years.
Well,
still, to have it on your mind and to be driving you and inspiring you for that long. But I did want to talk briefly about your motorcycle excursion that never was.
Yes.
That really grabbed me at the beginning of the book, at the beginning of Searching for Tamsin Donner. I thought you were going to go on a motorcycle trip.
Yes, I did.
And then you didn't. Tell us about that. And why was that important to begin the story that way?
Well, I wanted to take this cross-country motorcycle trip the way that my modern heroine was. And I bought the motorcycle. I learned to ride it with varying degrees of success. It was the wrong motorcycle for me. It was too high slung. I couldn't balance it at stoplights without standing on my tiptoes, and it was constantly falling over, and then I would lug up this 350-pound machine. And, well, this was the height of the women's movement, and people would ride, men would ride by in cars and say, liberated lady, get your motorcycle off. Mm-hmm. And I just told everybody I knew I was going to make that trip. And the more I thought about it, the more frightened I got. And I just started lying awake at night thinking about how dangerous it would be until eventually I just stopped talking about it. And nobody else ever talked about it again either. And so I didn't. 7 years passed, and then I decided to go with my family because by that time I had woven a little bit of Tamsin Donner into this novel, and I wanted to go check both her route and also the modern motorcycle route that my characters had taken. But I considered that a failure that I ended up going in a station wagon rather than on my motorcycle.
That's part of the searching for Tamsin Donner, the fact that you brought your family with you.
Yes.
On that cross-country excursion, which we'll be talking about in a little while with Gabrielle, your daughter, who's in the studio with us. Did you find something that you'd like to read from Impatient with Desire, the novel by Gabrielle Burton?
Okay. The title, Impatient with Desire, is from a letter that Tamsin wrote her sister when she was 23, and she took a great sailing ship from Massachusetts to North Carolina for a teaching job. And midway, she wrote her sister all the details so far, and she ended it saying, "My heart is big with hope and impatient with desire," which pretty much sums up Tamsin Donner in one line. This is set in the mountains when they're trapped there for 4 months, and her husband George is dying, the children are starving, and it's known from history that she kept a journal, but her journal was lost. Impatient with Desire is her imagined journal. 1846. Imagine all the roads a woman and a man walk until they reach the road they'll walk together. I never intended to marry again after Tully died. It wasn't for lack of chances, but that's nothing to boast about. In Ohio and in Illinois, even an outspoken woman like me has her pick of men. Most of the men were barely older than my Thomas would have been had he lived. Some women married those boys, and I say to each her own, but young or old were not for me. I thought I had buried my heart with Tully. I met George Donner in a cornfield, and the beginning wasn't auspicious. I had stripped an ear of corn for my students, discovered a larva, and put it on my finger for them to see. Corn borer larva, I said. It's the larva of a moth. If unchecked, this little thing will feed on and destroy the hardiest crop of corn, potatoes, or beans. As my students examined the tiny worm crawling on my finger, I looked up to see a tall gentleman in his 50s watching me intently. When I met his eyes, he said, "You need permission to be in this field, ma'am." How many tall gentlemen have hectored me about one thing or another in my lifetime? I drew myself up to my full height, forcing myself to speak civilly because of the children. "I am the teacher, sir. My students are gathering botanical specimens." He considered that a moment and said, "I'll still need to know when you're here, ma'am. When the corn gets taller, I may have to send in a search party for you." My students snickered. I'm hardly taller than some of them, but I've never equated height with strength or virtue, and certainly not with good manners. I was about to give this gentleman a piece of my mind when I noticed how his eyes crinkled as he smiled, how benign and good-natured he looked, and yes, how handsome he was. "Never underestimate the power of small beings, children," I said, and not breaking gaze with him, I squashed the borer between my fingers. His smile grew broader, and he made a small bow. "George Donner, ma'am." I smiled and bowed back. "Tamsin Eustace Dozier, sir." All my life, I never had enough time, and now I have nothing but time. My senses have become very acute here. Several times here, late at night, it seems I can even recall the precise sound of the corn rustling.
That's Gabrielle Burton reading from her new novel, Impatient with Desire. It's told from the point of view of Tamsin Donner, the matriarch of the Donner Reed Party. It's the group that is well known for their voyage, their ill-fated voyage from Illinois to California. We'll return in a few moments with Gabrielle Burton and her daughter, Gabrielle C. Burton, writer and film producer, when we talk about the other book that Gabrielle's written, Searching for Tamsin Donner. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, open. From NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock on today's edition of the show. The stringent new immigration law in Arizona raises new questions about the United States border enforcement. And Talk of the Nation will take a look at what works and what doesn't work when it comes to securing the borders. That's on Talk of the Nation at 2.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests today, Gabrielle Burton. She's a novelist and screenwriter and author of two books recently released. The first one a year ago, Searching for Tamsin Donner, which is a memoir, and then a novel called Impatient with Desire, both by Gabrielle Burton, and both revolve around the Donner Party, that group of American pioneers that set out for California in a wagon train and were delayed by a series of mishaps. You know, Gabrielle, one of the things that was really frustrating about the story, once I read from Tamsin's point of view and how you put it, was that the women were not allowed to vote on whether they would take the ill-fated shortcut, which is what was the source of their demise, is they get stuck in a place that they couldn't move from quickly enough. And there is a tone of feminism about Tamsin as well. And in fact, really the only criticism, if you will, that I found at all of your book was that maybe you made her a little too feminist, a little too political.
Well, you know, that's interesting because she is from a time when women then put us to shame today. You know, that was a time of the Quakers, the abolitionist movement, and then the anti-slavery movement, and the suffragists were starting. All of that was happening in the late 1830s, 1840s, and Tamsin, of course, was well-educated and would have known all of that. I think that compared to the other women of that time, the Grimke sisters and the others, she was a pussycat. But I think people just are not familiar with that first wave of women and how strong they were.
Consciously were of that and of the situation.
I gave her Elizabeth Cady Stanton. When she got married, she insisted that Obey be left out of the wedding vows, and then her husband said, well, leave it out of mine too. And so I gave that to Tamsin. But there are many, many examples of where there were very, very powerful women then, and yet they couldn't vote. And we really don't know how that played down at all. James Reed, who left with them from Springfield, he kept a diary that's mostly just weather and how many miles they went. But at one place, he says, they camped at the Mad Women Camp because all the women were mad with anger. And it's always fascinated me because what were they mad about? I don't know, but they were mad enough that he wrote it down in his diary.
Was that before or after they made the change in the route?
Oh, that was after. See, they took this shortcut in the Wasatch Mountains, which is in Wyoming, Utah, and Nevada. And that's where they lost a month of time. And it delayed them so much. They thought they would save 300 miles, but it turned out that they got a month behind, and that made them the last party on the trail. consumed so many of their resources, both physical and their food.
I was surprised as well by how many children there were, how many whole families there were. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I thought of it maybe a couple families and all a bunch of a lot more men.
Yes, no. And there were many small children. One baby was actually born on the trail in the Donner Party. That happened quite frequently on the trail because people were on the trail 6 months. And so, you know, people died, people got married, people had babies. And that complicated the rescue efforts greatly because when the rescue parties did start coming in, there were only a few men each time because it was extremely dangerous, and they had to carry the small children through the snow. The children couldn't walk in it, and so they could only take a few people out each time.
One night when you retraced the route to prepare for the book in general, but in Searching for Champs and Donner, you write about it where you one night stayed beneath a tree that was believed to have been the backdrop for the Donner camp when they were holed up for 4 months.
Yes.
Why did you do that? Because you were all alone underneath that tree.
That's right.
Exposed.
Yes. And I'm not an outdoor person.
I would never do that, and I am an outdoor person.
Well, I just felt I couldn't. I hadn't been able to make that motorcycle trip, and I felt that if I did not spend one night there alone, where she had spent nearly 5 months, that I just couldn't live with myself. And so I had my Swiss Army knife bunched up in my hand, and it was just the longest night of my life. Not only was I afraid of men drinking beer, camping across the clearing, and also all across the country, vandals had trashed the pioneer graves, and I was thinking, will they come to this pioneer grave tonight to trash it? At the campground, a little girl had died of bubonic plague 2 days before, and I thought, bubonic plague, you know, isn't that a medieval disease? But there were squirrels carrying it, so every little skittering sound, I'm lying on the ground in my sleeping bag with my Swiss Army knife and just terrified. But eventually light came.
Did anyone try to talk you out of it?
My husband and 5 daughters stayed at the campground, and my husband really didn't want me to do it, but he knew I felt I had to do it, and so he didn't say anything.
Did you get anything out of that besides, I don't know, a few gray hairs maybe?
I mean it was a challenge. It certainly made me feel much stronger. True to myself, true to Tamsin. I really do think that had I not done it, that I would have,
You'd always wonder.
Been a little different.
Now, what's amazing is how young your children were at the time.
Yes.
Five daughters, ages?
13 to 6.
Now, how old were you, Gabrielle, at the time?
I was 7.
In the middle? Are you the middle child?
I'm the 4th of 5.
So do you remember the night your mother spent under the tree?
I think I remember more the story about it. Obviously, when you grow up and you sort of hear these things, and then now I've read the book, so that kind of replaces some memories.
Right.
But I remember definitely the single-mindedness of my mom's passion, which was very inspiring. And I think also one thing that I just realized was a lot of families make cross-country trips, and it's a great cross-country trip to do, to follow the Donner Trail, because it grounds you in a story that is real and in history, and yet for children it's extremely dramatic. There's, you know, blood and gore and drama and murder and, you know, love and a lot of these elements that children respond to in any story, especially, you know, as from 6 years old to 14, that ages definitely would respond to things like that. So in a sense, it's sort of the American Harry Potter type story where you can draw kids into our real history and on a trip that is a family travel time together. So the other aspect about the trip that was interesting was that we were all responsible for something on the trip. And every day, one of us would have to keep the accounts. And Mom and Dad say that we sort of became terrors because we'd say, oh, we overspent $3 yesterday, so you can't have coffee today. And we would stick to that, and they'd have to sneak away and get their coffee or something.
You had no idea what coffee meant at the time. Way too young to understand that
with
one.
With five children, I know they needed that coffee, but we were definitely keeping to our accounts. But I think, you know, as a seven-year-old, and you're thinking, well, we've got, you know, this sense of responsibility and how a family works and how a unit works, and that also relates to understanding how the pioneer trains worked going across country, to think of you had a certain amount of provisions and you had to make that last for a certain amount of time, and then to relate that to they ran out of it and how did the family survive and how did they all work together as a unit. So I didn't remember that particular night. Well, actually, I did, in that Mom found something that was a little white, looked like a piece of bone. And it was incredibly exciting, and because she had been walking around as the sun rose and then found this piece of bone right near the tree. And for all of us, that was an incredible archaeological find. It later turned out to be a stone, a pebble. But I think there was something imbued in that of discovery and of possibility still, even though this was 150 years ago, that it was so close to us.
Do you still have that stone?
I gave it to one of my daughters and a special birthday. And I also stopped smoking there at that tree that night. And I had smoked since I was 13. And so it was, I'd smoked for 25 years.
Why is that, do you think?
And, well, I had tried to give up smoking many, many times. And there, that was a sacred place that had been sanctified by blood. And Tamsin Dunner had done so much there. So it was a little bit, for me, again, like sleeping by the tree. If I couldn't do it there, I just felt I'll never be the kind of person I want to be. I mean, I probably would have been a dead person if I hadn't done it. But also just not to have to handle every anxiety with a cigarette, et cetera. So that worked, and that stone helped me do that. Every time I wanted a cigarette, I reached in my pocket and felt that stone, which I thought was a bone.
I fell for the snap a rubber band on your wrist thing. That worked for me for a while. We're talking with Gabrielle Burton and her daughter, Gabrielle C. Burton. Gabrielle is the author of Searching for Tamsin Dunner, a memoir about her 38 years studying and learning and researching about Tamsin Dunner, the matriarch of the Dunner family. Also about a trip she took with her family across country following retracing the steps of the Dunner family trip from Illinois headed out to California. She's also the author of Impatient with Desire. It's a novel. Imagines through the point of view of Tamsin Dunner, the matriarch, again. I was wondering about what you thought. Now, going on adventures during the summer wasn't unusual for your family. You went all over the place. That was a typical thing. Your dad was a college professor, had your summers. I guess you had some, I thought, how do they do that? Well, I guess you had some freedom. But you scrimped and saved to do it. It wasn't easy street. So I wondered how did the Dunner, the retracing of the Dunner voyage stand out for you, Gabrielle, as a child?
I think that was one of the first trips where it really launched our traveling together.
Okay.
And I think being in a station wagon, seven people for, what was it, two months, is pretty extraordinary in and of itself.
Yeah, we used to do that too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the idea that you're sitting for, you know, long stretches of driving through cornfields and you've just got to get along and, you know, find interesting things within each other. The success of that trip then, I think, led to wanting to do more of these kind of things together. And I think for Mom and Dad, it probably, you could answer to that, but it maybe opened up that one could have adventure and family. I think that's something about the book Searching for Tamsin Dunner that's interesting to me as a new parent. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, that as when you have children, you often feel like, well, that's it. My life's kind of now about parenting and adventure's over. And that was when you're young. And my parents showed me a different way, that their adventures really began when they had five children, and those children were, you know, 5 to 12 at the time, I think, was probably the first trip that we took that was significant. And then that led to this other trip. And I think this is a touchstone also for the Donner Trail, coming back to it from me as an artist and my sisters too. That was something that was very inspiring, to see somebody who continued following her passion even in the face of rejection and brick walls, and just kept at it and now found success.
I'm going to quote Tamsin now from the book. It says, "All my life I have wondered about the place I'm not in." And that made me think of you, Gabrielle, as the author. Mm-hmm. How much were you channeling, Tamsin?
Well, are you asking me that literally?
I mean, No, not literally.
You know, a lot of people say, are you Tamsin Donner reincarnated? Well, and I say, no, I don't believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, I know. I meant kind of, I don't know, on an emotional level or identifying with her.
Well,
how much was that you in that sentence?
I have no idea. You know, I really can't separate that out. I know that in her early life, when she's in North Carolina, before she loses her first family in a 3-month period, she's very happy in North Carolina, and she talks about what a wonderful land it is. And then she says in the next paragraph, "I'm anxious to go to Ohio, but I hardly doubt we shall leave right away." And then they actually were going to go to Ohio because they were against slavery. And it turns out that her husband and her son died, and she miscarried a daughter, and so she later ended up in Illinois. But she was always what. Even that trip from Massachusetts to North Carolina, that was a time when respectable women did not travel alone. And she not only travels alone, but she talks about how everybody, she says, I have interacted with so many people, and no one has despised me, and I will never be despised. And now that word means a little bit different. It means like no one has disrespected me. And she just did her thing. I think some people are that way and some people aren't. And you either are or you aren't, and the one can't understand the other.
We're going to have to take another short break. I invite you to give us a call if you'd like, 614-292-8513, to speak with Gabrielle Burton, novelist and screenwriter, and her daughter, Gabrielle C. Burton. Just to confuse all of us, she's a writer and a film producer, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get to a couple emails when we return to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Capital City Radio is the new HD radio service from WOSU. Get a fresh perspective on the news with Capital City Radio. Start your day with The Takeaway and be a part of the American conversation. Follow the fast-moving stream of news and information with Here and Now, or get a global perspective with PRI's The World. Listen to Capital City Radio on HD3 89.7 FM or online at capitalcityradio.org.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here and a conversation with Jennifer Bruner about her recent primary campaign for the U.S. Senate and the challenges and opportunities for women in politics. That discussion begins at 11.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
Currently 59 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. Occasional showers today and a high of 63. More rain showers tonight, a low of 55. And there will be rain for Tuesday with a chance of a thunderstorm tomorrow morning and a high of 63. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Gabrielle Burton, novelist and screenwriter, author of Searching for Tamsin Donner, came out last year. It's a memoir. And also Impatient with Desire, a novel about the same topic, Tamsin Donner, the matriarch of the Donner family, and better known as the Donner Party, the wagon train of families that went out, headed for California, and hit a glitch. Why, Gabrielle, did Searching for Tamsin Donner, the memoir, come out before the novel? Why'd you do it that way?
Well, I didn't do it that way intentionally. Okay. I had a draft of that back in 1988, which was just telling the story of retracing the Oregon Trail. And at that time, I had published another novel, Heartbreak Hotel, and my editor really liked this nonfiction account, but she wanted more personal things about the family. And at that time, I just was not willing to put any more personal things in. So I gave it a couple of tries, but I just couldn't satisfy her. So I put that away. And then in the 90s, I was in film school in California, and the Donner Party sesquicentennial was on, and my family badgered me to go. And I mean, Tabitha Donner was such an integral part of our family life. I mean, not only did the children...
Well, you named your dog.
Yeah, that's right. Our dog, everything was named Tamsin.
Don't want to forget that.
And so I went there. It was all aversive to me because it was tied up with that first motorcycle novel that had the small part about Tamsin Donner that had been rejected many times. And so by the second day, I realized... I'm an expert on the Donner Party. All that I had thought I'd forgotten all came back. I went back to film school, and I wrote my second year screenplay on the Donner Party, on all 87 characters of the Donner Party. And then I worked on that many times off and on over the years, winnowing it down until eventually I got to the place where I was able to say, I don't want to be a historian. I don't want to be a historical scholar. I don't want to tell the story of the Donner Party. I really just want to capture Tamsin Donner's spirit. And that allowed me a lot of freedom. I went back to that cross-country trip, and University of Nebraska, well, it had 19 rave rejections from agents who simply kept saying, well, who's the niche? I love this book, but who will read this book? They didn't know how to market it. University of Nebraska really loved it, and they wanted it. And when you publish for a university press, because it's government money, there are a lot of constraints. It has to go out to two independent readers who have 3 months to get back to you. And then my first two readers came back with revise and resubmit. And so I did that, and then it went out to two more readers, and then a committee, and then a board. So that took a whole year. And during that time, I went back and I revised the screenplay, and then I thought, well, I think I'll start the novel. And I wrote that first line, imagine all the roads, and then I wrote the first three pages. I went out to my husband, and I said, listen to this, honey. This is good. Because I had the voice.
Yeah, right.
And I just think it's all those years. There were her 17 letters that I had chanced upon. And
which then, are all in The Searching for Tamsin Donner.
And all those years of thinking about her. The hard part of writing the memoir was separating out what was actually factual and what I had imagined in all the other forms. So I had to, again, go back and do a lot of research and check every fact. But that has the history accurate up to now. And then once I was done with that, well, when, you know, when you run out of facts, you turn to the imagination. And I wanted to write that journal. And it was very freeing to put all of the facts down because although Impatient with Desire is based on facts, I didn't have to totally stick to facts. I could just think about what seemed true to me.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just a reminder that Gabrielle Burton will be at Borders on Sawmill signing books Friday at 5 p.m. That's Borders at Sawmill, and we'll put a link to that on our webpage at wosu.org/allsides. We have some emails now, one from Jerome. I understand your point that there is more to the Donner Party than the cannibalism, but it is as important to the story as is Oedipus gouging out his eyes. These tragic endings allow us to enter into a discussion of important philosophical issues, not the least of which is what it means to be human. It is sad that some textbooks now have redacted the cannibalism from the story. Do you think it should have been redacted?
Not at all, because it happened. I think that's an excellent comment. Mm-hmm. And I think if people looked at the cannibalism in that sense as a human response to a terrible adversity, I wouldn't have any problem with it. It really has become reduced to a macabre joke, and those people do not seem real to people. And that's the part that I think that people tend to –
make too much of the cannibalism while not really getting it. And I totally agree with that beautiful statement.
I agree. Made. That was a beautiful one.
Yeah. And I don't know where anybody has cut it out. That's news
that
to me.
That seems crazy almost.
Yes.
Email from Mike. I would like to recommend the great documentary film on the Donner Party that was made by the PBS series American Experience. It's been shown on WOSU-TV a couple of times, and I believe it can be watched online at PBS or could be purchased as a DVD. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, that's the Rick Burns documentary.
Okay.
It's very good. It's, you know, I hope to have the opportunity to either do a movie or a mini series where that's a very good documentary, but it's a tiny bit bleak. It's okay. Really black and white, and I think there are more colors in this story, you know, just their hopes and their aspirations and the great adventure that they were embarking on and what the land meant to them as they went across it and what that all looked like. And it's an excellent documentary, but I do hope to have...
There's more.
Yes.
There's more.
Yeah.
And Gabrielle Jr., you're a writer and a film producer, and the name of your company with your four sisters is Five Sisters
Productions.
Yeah. And you have produced movies before.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best-known one is Manna from Heaven.
Yeah.
And others. So I was going to ask you about that. What are the possibilities that there'll be a movie from this story?
We'd love to do it. The issue is always comes down to budget and then distribution channels. And so we optioned the screenplay of Impatient with Desire. It's called Country of the Mind, and we would love to do it with the company. I think the other thing Mom's saying about doing it as a miniseries for a place like HBO or some channel, the History Channel, or maybe even a PBS miniseries, would be that it would allow you a lot more opportunity to explore the stories in here than having to cull it down to an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd love to be involved.
There are a lot of stories within the one.
Yes.
Did you ever feel like along the way, as you explored the mind of Tamsin, that there were other characters out there that you, like a spinoff, that there were other people out there?
Well, I went it the other way. I wrote all those 87 stories before I got back to Tamsin Donner. But you could just write many, many stories. The Rescuers, they were all such heroes. What happened to the children after?
I was surprised that they came to get them in a way. It was horribly dangerous.
Yes, it was.
For anybody to go into that snow.
Yes.
I was surprised at how many times they came back. And really, from what I learned from the books, is a testament to how little you really know about the story and how it so much has been eclipsed by the cannibalism.
Yes, and also just generally the pioneer period is kind of...
Like I said, I'm a child of wagon train.
You know, it's poke bonnets and wagon trains. And these people are part of they paid the price for us to have that expansion and be out there. And even the ones who behave badly sometimes are heroes to me because they did it.
The book, Searching for Tamsin Donner, revolves a lot around, I guess, a central theme in your life and something you've written about as far as managing your writing career, motherhood, five daughters, and feminism. How does that play out for you? Do you feel as if you are fulfilled by the books now, that you've fulfilled this quest in yourself?
About Tamsin Donner?
Mm-hmm.
You mean, yes, I absolutely do. I don't think I would have had I not written the novel also, you know. But I don't feel the need. I just wanted to make her real. I would like to have all the Donner Party become real to people and to have people understand that we stand on those people's shoulders. And they didn't just rock along in those wagons singing They Call the Wind Mariah. You know, most of them walked 2,500 miles across the country. And I think Americans are very tough and can rise to challenges if we are challenged. But I'm not so sure that we're that tough
anymore.
Those people were something.
We have an email now from a listener. You talk about Tamsin Donner as part of the first wave of feminism. I am wondering if you are familiar with contemporary academic feminism, Judith Butler or Audre Lorde, for instance. Regardless of your familiarity with those scholars, I wonder what today's feminists can learn from the Tamsin Donner story.
That's
another good one.
That's right. That's a good question. Well, they certainly can learn that. I think it's still an unsolved problem of trying to balance family, work, love, adventure, and I think many women today drop the adventure part. They just never even consider that that's possible. And I think we should get back to that, where women should feel that that is an option for them. So that whole balancing question, I mean, these women didn't think about that they had to just stay home with their children. I mean, people then, this whole notion that you would devote 24 hours a day to your children, that's a pretty modern notion. And we didn't have this long extended childhood period that we now do, which goes into about your 40s is what I can figure out.
So far as you can tell, huh?
Yes, that's right.
I hope it goes longer. I think that, if I can pipe in
here, sure.
An interesting thing that as from a daughter having seen this, I do think, as Mom's saying, also, and I can speak as a recent parent, that there's a sense that you have to sacrifice something in your life. And one of the things that both my parents said in raising us was that they wanted all seven lives to stay afloat at the expense of none. And usually in families, the mother often sacrifices a lot of her own life for the for the others to stay afloat. And that is something that we all have to struggle to fight against, to have it so that everyone has a voice and everybody can survive and we don't turn to eat each other or to eat our own selves up. So I think that there's something in both of these books. It's funny, I wouldn't necessarily say that they hit head on about feminism, but I think that if you talk about being a strong woman or being a family or being a united parenting group, my father is extremely important in the Searching for Tamsin Donner quest as well, of our being a family unit that was trying to carve out a new territory in parenting and in family dynamics.
In the LA Times, in a headline, and I think it was for something, an essay that you wrote, they said that Tamsin Donner is part of your family now.
Well, she is. Some people think that that's literal, but she's not related to us. I'm not a descendant. But she is so entwined in our family history. She's just part of our family identity. I mean, all families have things that become interests that are touchstones for them, and she is ours.
We have a phone call now from a listener. If you'd like to give us a call, we have about 6 minutes left, 614-292-8513. And Mark, you're on the air with Gabrielle Burton. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Gabrielle and everyone. Something I wondered, the stories that you brought across, maybe in the form of books, perhaps something in the form of a play or theater, maybe movie, miniseries, the different ways that this story could be expressed, I guess to the point perhaps when your work reaches enough closure on this particular story, if there's any potential for similar epic sagas, maybe the Trail of Tears with the Cherokee or the Seminoles or the Wyandots or perhaps the party that crossed Utah when it was the Deseret and it was attacked by some of the local people. But some of the other similar crossing the country sagas of great difficulty, and wondered your thoughts on that.
Well, Diane Glancy has written wonderfully about the Trail of Tears. She's half Cherokee and... I really love her writing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. I've been on the Oregon Trail a very long time, and longer than anybody else ever was. And I have many, many other things that I want to write.
Yeah.
So unless, say the opportunity came up for a miniseries, of course I would go back, and that would plunge me into it full time for some time. But there are many stories like what happened to the children. I'm kind of always tempted to do something with that, but I think I'll let someone else do that. It's fascinating, fascinating material.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
And let me just add to that that he was saying there are so many stories. The Donner Party has been done. There's a ballet. There's an opera. There are many nonfiction accounts. There are novels. It's in long narrative poems. And I even met a woman in San Diego who has a puppet show of the Donner Party.
Oh, my gosh.
And it just continues to fascinate everybody. It's 163 years ago, mm-hmm. and yet it's just the American dream turned nightmare. And it always, you know, you were left with, what would I have done had I been there?
It's even more than that, too. I'm just thinking about this now, because it is the dream turned nightmare, but also that sense of the human spirit and the fortitude that those people had to get to survive that long, to get their children out. I think there's something incredibly inspiring about that, too, and that can give us hope for our own lives.
We just have a few minutes left. I want to get to this email real quickly, because it's something that you address, I think, in that essay in the LA Times. I might be mistaken, but it's from a listener. It says, a recent study shows no sign of cannibalism at Donner site. Cites the April 19 report that there's no evidence of cannibalism at the Donner Party campsite. Say researchers who analyzed remains from the site at Alder Creek in the Sierra Nevada Mountains of California. And you've addressed this head on.
Yes, yes. When that came out and made that big flurry, I wrote a piece on the Huffington Post that's called
That's right.
The Donners, Did They or Didn't They? And that's based on an archaeological dig that was done at Alder Creek. There were three campsites, and Alder Creek is where Tamsin and George Donner were, 7 miles east of the others. And they found, I think, something like 55,000 bone fragments, and some of these fragments are smaller than a piece of rice, and some were so small they couldn't do any research on them. This latest analysis was 55 of those bones, and they were found to be dog bones, horse bones, cattle bones, but no human bones. And from that, the newspaper report said, see, no cannibalism. But that didn't say that at all. It just said they hadn't found physical evidence that confirmed cannibalism.
It didn't rule it out.
There's actually no doubt historically that cannibalism occurred, and the survivors talked about it, wrote about it, and the rescuers came in and testified to it. So there's no doubt.
Thank you, Gabrielle Burton and Gabrielle Burton Jr. for
Thanks
being with us today. We'll have her website on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thank you. And also you can go to her Facebook page from there as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.